Good afternoon, everyone. Thank you for coming. Well, it is with great pleasure that I present today a colleague here, Alexander Schenking. Ali has been working in the Ecosystems Lab for 5 years now. And he has a background in electrical and software engineer. And then around in the 2000s, he decided to change careers. He got interested in ecology and started working for several conservation organizations in Washington, D.C. After that, he enrolled in a forestry master at Yale. And after that, he pursued a PhD in forestry in Florida, focusing on the role of disturbances of forest logging and drought in Bolivian rainforest. And today, he's going to be talking to us about how forest structure changes productivity. Does it matter? Does it not? So I hope you all enjoy.
Thank you. Thanks. So it's a nice, intimate group, so please stop me at any point and ask questions or whatever. Let's see. The basic kind of situation for plant productivity, as we know, everything comes from the sun, and basic calculations from a long time ago show that even though the sun is putting out this much energy, only a little bit of it actually is incident upon the Earth. Of that that's incident upon the Earth, we have about 0.01% of that is assimilated by plants. So this is the large picture of plant productivity, which is that it's really tiny in terms of total energy. So most of what our lab thinks about is this tiny little bit of solar energy. So in some sense, we're thinking about peanuts. Another way to think about it is that any small change in this percentage, Andy, is potentially will have large effects on the global carbon cycle. Because as we know, plant productivity is a major component of the global carbon cycle. So there are two ways we can think about that. The thinking about plant productivity and ecosystem productivity goes back quite a ways, and perhaps even before this. At least since 1932, scientists have been trying to quantify the amount of carbon that's taken up by forest ecosystems. Even then, it maybe was a kind of niche concern. Quite a seminal paper in 1953 came out, where they really were prognosticating that, productivity is going to become a thing at some point. So here we are, and thinking a lot about productivity. If we take the bird's eye view of forest productivity, plant productivity, As we know, everything comes from solar energy, and it's incident upon the vegetation. A portion of that gets absorbed by the leaves, and only a portion of the spectrum, the photosynthetically active portion of the spectrum, is going to participate in that. The part that doesn't get absorbed will fall to the ground. Of the part that gets absorbed, some will actually be assimilated by the plant, and another portion of that will escape as heat immediately, or perhaps latent heat. This is called the fractional absorbed PAR, the fraction of the absorbed light, and this is called the conversion efficiency of the absorbed PAR, how much of that is going to go to the plant, and how much gets sent off immediately as heat. So this is the basic equation. GPP is gross primary productivity. is going to be the conversion efficiency times the amount, the fraction of the absorbed PAR multiplied by the total amount of PAR or light that's incident upon your ecosystem. So this conversion efficiency here can be thought of as being largely guided by the physiology of the plant and perhaps the microclimate. The amount that the plant is able to intercept in the first place is largely a function of the structure of that plant and of that ecosystem, and perhaps something about pigments as well that's going to influence your transmission rates and so on. So this is the kind of overall structure in a way that we can think about productivity, and this is going to kind of direct how we're thinking about where structure fits in this big picture. We can also think about net primary productivity, but we won't talk about that too much right now. So overall, what controls productivity? There's been a good amount of work looking at the first place you go to think about this is the climate, right? So precipitation. In 1970, we see that there's really good relationships between productivity and precipitation. A bit before that, if we look at total evapotranspiration, which is incorporating both precipitation and solar input, we get really good predictions across a range of ecosystems. So we're thinking now, okay, boy, climate really controls productivity, and maybe that's almost all we need to know. So there are going to be a number of other controls over productivity as well. So growing season length, okay, in the tropics, of course, we're going to have a whole year of growing season that's going to let us grow, at least in terms of annual productivity, much more than a temperate system. Temperature, soil nutrients, most of these things are going, except for perhaps growing season length, are going to kind of inform or affect the conversion efficiency term. But what about the amount that these systems have to work with in the first place? So, and most of the attention has been really focused on temperature, soil nutrients, climate. Let's see. So these, if we think about the range of ecosystems that some of these studies are looking at, they're going all the way from grasslands all the way up to forests. It's been assumed that these forests are much more productive, just because they look more productive, I think, than these smaller statured systems. And I think we all walk around probably thinking that way. But why would structure affect productivity that way? So And why would it matter? So the context of my thinking is that I was working on a elevation gradient of plots in Peru. It's kind of hard to see here, but you see these little red dots that are going up from the Andes and 3,500 meters all the way down to the Amazon. And I was tasked with thinking about the structure. It was part of a larger traits campaign, but I was thinking about the structure of trees, why they're formed the way they are, the structure of these plots and how it relates to to productivity. And I thought, well, maybe I was tasked with a really silly goal, because it seemed to me, well, leaves absorb the light, and then if we just have, if you say, you know, one system has a leaf area index, which is the number of leaves per the amount of leaf area per unit ground area. If you control for that, what else do you really need to know? So I was thinking about ways that leaf area could be distributed differently, and we'll come back to this maybe a little later, but what would it really matter as long as their fractional absorbed radiation is the same across ecosystems? Why would it really matter? And I think that, some of the kind of historical thinking about this would agree with me that structure, insofar as it just informs LAI, leaf area index, it shouldn't change productivity that much. So let's take a quick step back and think about forest structure and what is it. Well, you can think about the diameter distribution of trees in a system. This has quite a long history of thinking about why these systems are structured the way that they are. And there's been some amazing work by the Japanese and associated researchers that you saw there before, and then looking at properties like leaf area densities of these forests, where they'll actually put up scaffolding and mow down an entire swath of forest and measure the leaf area in every voxel of that forest. Amazing work. Where they're counting the amount of leaves of these trees and doing quite an amazing job. And all towards the effort of describing these systems, how they operate, and perhaps why their productivity is the way that it is. This kind of seminal study that I keep going back to looked at relatively small statured systems, 100 centimeters tall, and took disks and was measuring the amount of photosynthetic and non-photosynthetic vegetation at every layer and looking at the light extinction curves as you go down. And so we have the leaves and the non-photosynthetic vegetation. And what they found and what they theorized is that this is your productivity, and here is the extinction coefficient, which is how much light gets diminished as it passes through a leaf layer. But what they found was that for a given amount of light, so these are kind of light isoclines, that there is a ideal leaf area. So as there's more light incident upon your system can maintain more leaves. Because if you get darker and darker and darker, or lower down, at some point your leaf respiration is going to cost more than it produces. So what this is saying, theoretically, is that given an amount of light, you should have a certain amount of leaf area, and that will tell you how much productivity you have. End of story. Or should be end of story. And so this was quite an influential study, and I think it still holds water in many ways. And again, this is perhaps one reason why I was thinking, geez, my task here is silly to try to understand why structure matters for productivity, because it's more a part of a system than it is an actual influence. But anyway, moving on. So that type of work led to some pretty amazing studies, again, of measuring how much light was available at each layer in these tall Malaysian rainforests as you go down and down, how this light extinction worked, and therefore how productivity was working. So let's just take a look at how some of these systems are structured. So you can have relatively homogeneous structures. We're pretty familiar with these rainforest structures, but then we might have structures that start looking more clumped, right? Or we can have more savanna-like structures with lower herbaceous layers. We can have these gradients of structure And then we can even have these grassy structures, right? I think a lot of the way that these models have been developed has been thinking about these upper structures that are more or less homogeneous, random, mixed, and so we'll get back to this later, but what I started wondering about was what happens when you have clumping structures? What happens when you have things that are not homogeneous, that are heterogeneous? How will that affect this whole assumption about LAI and productivity? Oh. Okay, just more pictures. Jumping to close to present day now. So now we can quantify structure on grand scales using satellite products and various indices. And we can get estimates of productivity across grand scales. That doesn't mean that they're right, but we can have large scale estimates. And then we can, so this is from Running back in 2004, it was a pretty seminal study, looking at how these different ecosystems fall on that map, where you're showing that grasses here, grasses tend to have much lower productivity than your broadleaf evergreen forest. Right. So this is a big modeling study, and there are lots of problems with this. So again, this is maybe one reason, and it might be right, but one reason why we're thinking that forests have higher productivity than grasses. So this is a similar study built on some of that data, but you can see the grasslands here only getting up to about 1,000 grams per meter squared annually, where our forests are getting up to 3,000 in the case of the evergreens, maybe not so much higher than the grasslands in the case of needle forests. But I wonder, is that study right? So Ema did a nice study looking up in the Andes at the difference between forests and grasslands right next to each other, and found that actually their productivity wasn't that much different. Now, this is net primary productivity, maybe a little bit different than gross, but regardless, I think this goes a long way towards making us wonder if there is something inherent about structure that allows systems to be more productive or not. Is it just so grasses, as we'll see, grasses can have, grass, so this is the leaf area index, right? So this is the amount of leaf area per ground area. The grasses are not much less, and in some cases more, so they're quite comparable to the forest. This is from this study in the 50s, and there will be other studies out there too, I'm sure, that look at these, but if grasses and forests have the same leaf area, should they really be that different in terms of productivity? And in fact, because grasses don't have to support as much woody respiration, maybe they should be even higher. Why do we think it's higher than grass? Another feature, and so I'd say maybe the jury's still out on that one. I think probably they tend to be more productive than grasses, but I think maybe not in all cases. The other feature I think that is important about forest productivity here is that, these are environmental constraint axes here. While a number of these systems are limited by environmental constraints, these broadleaf forests tend to be not. So they're not as constrained by climate as grasslands, as some of these other systems. So if we if we're just thinking about forest productivity, then we're at a little bit of a loss because we can't explain it really well with climate. Now, there's some, we'll look at some research, some more current day research that's looking at that, but according to this, it's not really predictable by climate. So maybe if we add some structure in there, and the question is, can we turn this cloud into more of a line if we're accounting for structure between these systems? And I'm not going to answer that question today, but maybe I can point some ways forward that we're thinking about moving that seem promising. So I've just been arguing that structure shouldn't matter in many ways, but others argue that it should matter. So this is from metabolic scaling theory, and this is basically productivity. And all this is saying, because if you assume, again, this diameter distribution, and you make some other assumptions, you can say that productivity should be a function of the biomass, of the phytomass that's in the system. And that makes some basic sense, right? If you have more trees sucking up more light, you should be producing more biomass, right? So that has some basic sense. And you can see that they come up with a pretty good relationship. But again, so this is biomass on the x-axis, we're dealing with these large ranges where these are these really low biomass systems and these are these really high biomass systems, and so we see a good relationship. But if we're just looking at these forests, we get this cloud again that we saw before. That just, it's hard to, there's, if you were to cut out these systems, you'd have no relationship there with biomass. So again, and this is a story that will kind of come up over and over again, is that when you focus in on these high productivity systems, it seems to be difficult to explain the difference that we see between them. And it's an important thing to explain. Here's another study that was in Nature, again, showing this really nice relationship, maybe with some dispersion. But if you look into just these high productivity systems, it doesn't fit the model. If you have a lot more data, maybe it does start to fit the model. Maybe. It's still pretty fuzzy, but there's a pretty good kind of quantile regression line there, maybe. So maybe if you throw more data at it, it'll work. So that's an outstanding question, I would say. So there's still a lot more to explain. So let's try to start thinking about how structure and how we can add structural variables into these models to improve them. So adding LAI into them. Those models were not including LAI. You might make an assumption that higher biomass systems have higher LAI, but that's not necessarily the case. Again, here we go, NPP and LAI, leaf area index. Looks like a pretty good relationship. But again, if you look just at the high biomass systems, or the high LAI systems, not so great. So LAI is good. These are these boreal systems, like upper montane systems, and these are lower systems that actually have trees in them. So LAI itself isn't explaining much variation between these forests. So to me, that's surprising. And maybe there's a feedback between climate and LAI, so where you have high light, you have high LAI, and this surprises me, and these systems are difficult to model, I think. So what else is involved in forest structure? The spatial arrangement of leaf area. So if we try to complicate the story a little bit and not just say there's this much LAI, like you might say in a big leaf model, these kind of large land surface models, but let's try to be a little more sophisticated about how these leaves are arranged in space. Why would that matter? So when I first started this project, I thought, yeah, why should it matter? It shouldn't. But someone thought about that a long time before I did. And if these are leaf layers here, so the top leaf layer, and here's a hypothesized second leaf layer versus this hypothesized second leaf layer. And the point that Henry Horne is making here is that you want your second leaf layer to be far enough below the first so that you have a uniform light field there. Otherwise, this leaf could fall in the shade of the leaf above. You'll get self-shading. If you push that layer down far enough, then you have a greater chance of each leaf experiencing a relatively homogeneous light environment, and that's less of a risk for those leaves to go into negative carbon balance. So this is where one case where the actual spatial arrangement of these leaves is going to matter. So it's not just LAI, but you're going to be avoiding self-shading. So in this case, you'd rather be a tree than a grass, right? Because if you're grass, it's really hard to get this kind of spatial distance in order to experience these homogeneous light environments. In some of the work that we did along that gradient, we actually found, so this isn't a, this is kind of does not do the model justice, this graph, but basically the y-axis here is the crown depth. We measured individual crowns, and this is leaf size. So essentially what we're finding is that crowns that have smaller leaves, where you're more likely to have homogeneous light environments below, have deeper crowns. So this is one of the Henry Horne's predictions and kind of goes with the slide that we saw before. So we've been able to verify aspects of that prediction. Another, I think, interesting way to think about why spatial arrangement of leaves matters is the actual leaf angle and the azimuth of the leaf. So if you have a, let me explain here. Oops, that's backwards. Okay, so if you have a leaf that's arranged horizontally versus relatively vertical, when the sun is straight above you, your horizontal leaf is going to intercept quite a bit compared to the angled leaf. But in the morning or the afternoon, the story will change, where your horizontal leaf won't intercept all that much, and your vertical leaf will intercept more. So this will impact self-shading, but it will also serve as a way to perhaps enable you to increase your production in the morning and the afternoon. So what we see here is this is a model by Falster that is showing that as your this is the leaf angle. So here your leaves are more vertical, and here they're more horizontal. So in the morning, when the sun is really low, your vertical leaves will actually intercept more and be more productive in the morning and the afternoon. And as well, you'll have the advantage of protecting yourself from overheating during the midday. Finally, and I won't talk about this quite yet, we'll move on to it in a second, I think, but what hasn't been addressed much is the arrangement of these trees and leaves within space, within your forest plot. This clumping that I was talking to you about, the heterogeneity, that may play a role and may help us explain more about why these systems are behaving the way that they are. So we have some work ongoing. I'll show you some initial results from that. So But first, this is some work that Nikos Filas did along the same gradient that I just showed you. As you go from the lowlands here all the way up to the high Andes, and what you're looking at here, the black points are the actual productivity of those sites. This is a trait-based model that he ran, and the gray line are his predictions from this from the fully specified model. What's important here is that the blue line is the structural effect. So what Nico showed was that everything that I'd been trying to study didn't matter at all. So at least he put me on the paper, which is nice, but what he really showed was that traits, which is this red line here, and the climate combine to really explain a fair amount of the variation. So those two factors went quite a ways, but mostly it was actually the traits. So the point of this paper was showing that in large part the climate didn't matter. The insulation did. How much PAR you had to work with in the first place did matter. But beyond that, traits were really so the chemistry of your leaves, the structure of your leaves, and so on, what really mattered. And again, what's interesting here, this is a plot of LAI for these same plots. You see, it didn't. LAI doesn't change all that much. So again, a lot of the variation in productivity that we see have very little to do with LAI. I may just skip that one. Okay, so so we saw this graph before. How LAI largely fails when we're trying to model productivity. I'm just going to review a couple recent studies. So there's a line of thinking now that niche partitioning of light will go a long way towards explaining productivity. So if you have different species here occupying different strata of your forest, the idea is that these species are partitioning light in a vertical manner and thereby over-yielding, so that if you have a species mix, that mix will do better than a monoculture of your best species or of one of your species in producing carbon, in metabolizing carbon. So what's found is that they're finding positive effects, both because of temporal niche separation. So if you have leaf out differing with your bud burst of a different species, they can partition light in time. Also, if you have different species with different crown plasticities, so they can kind of fill the space a little bit better, then they're over-yielding. And another recent study looked at a similar type of framework, looking at how these crowns fill space, finding that in general, beyond the actual species effect of greater species richness giving you higher productivity, it was actually the structural complementarity. It was the way that they were fitting together that was giving you this effect. My qualm with these studies is that they're not going a long ways towards discarding LAI as an explanatory factor. I think that this has some potential of going a ways towards helping us explain it. I think that the why exactly isn't clear, because we're seeing before that higher LAI doesn't do a good job of explaining productivity differences. So if this is an LAI effect, then you wouldn't expect to see such a strong effect here. So I think there may be something else going on. Maybe it's the trait differences between these species. It's hard to exactly know what's happening. So there's more work to be done with that. A similar finding here. Okay, so thinking back then to that previous slide where we saw these light profiles in Malaysia and how these extinction coefficients as the light passes through these canopies are important, we ran some of the same kind of studies through our transect there in Peru. And so each, as you look from top to bottom, this is the height of the canopy for each tree. So a 20-meter tree would be there all the way to the bottom. And in general, this is going from up in the Andes all the way down to the lowland Amazon. And we were hanging these things from the top of tree crowns and looking at how light availability differed as you go down to the ground. Overall, we found some quite interesting patterns, and none of them or few of them were as you might predict. You get to the top of these crowns, and then light availability actually increases before it decreases again. And the question that we're going to try to answer with this data is, what does that matter for productivity? Does that boost the understory productivity? So doing a more precise job of quantifying that. So we collaborated with Greg Asner, who flew his kind of really cool plane above our plots and shot LIDAR down through the canopy. And these are these laser return profiles, not for our exact plots, but we got similar ones for our plots. And so this is up. So for some of these plots that are 40 meters tall, you can see that here you get the bulk of your laser return energy around 20 meters, and then it goes down. Whereas for these montane sites, you get a few trees probably poking out here, but really the bulk of your return is down at these kind of lower semi-herbaceous layers, maybe palms or something like that. So this, if you look at where the peak is here versus the total height, that's called the pH ratio, but it basically gives you an idea of the gross structure of your ecosystem. And so these are the same profiles that I just showed you, but they're colored from blue is this low pH ratio to black is this higher pH ratio. And what we find is that the more heterogeneous canopies seem to have this kind of high light availability and then quickly going down, whereas these more homogeneous sites have a more kind of gentle decline. So what we're hoping with this is to be able to use these light profile data to talk about the productivity of these sites, and then maybe we can scale up using some of these laser return profiles over larger scales. So that's work in progress right now. Sophie Fawcett has done similar work looking from intact across intact and log and fragmented systems and finding some really interesting kind of similar to some of those profiles I already showing you before, but where you have these log plots, you have this inversion here of your light is decreasing and then past a certain level it starts increasing in the understory. Probably because of these gaps, and you have some emergence, but then you have lots of lateral light penetrating the system. So the question is, what impacts will those have on the productivity of these sites? Okay, so back to the graphs of Nico's tearing my work apart, and what I'm trying to do is to try to make him tell a different story. So, unfortunately, this is already published, but what we're doing now, this model is built with this perfect plasticity approximation, which basically takes the height of trees and stacks them across. So as long as you're tall enough, you're assumed to be in the top of the canopy, and you're getting full light, And then if you're a medium tree, you're assumed to be below the tallest trees, and if you're a smallest tree, you're assumed to be at the bottom. Now, what happens with these heterogeneous forests where you have clumping, what that means is that just because you're tall doesn't mean that you get to the top, and just because you're small doesn't mean necessarily that you're at the bottom. So we're trying to be a little bit more kind of subtle about how we classify the exposure of these trees. And so what these are is, this is the stem count for each plot. This is the stem count, and here is, this is the light intensity experienced by a tree. So the green bars are what his previous model was using with his perfect plasticity approximation, where the tallest trees are getting the highest light, and then the medium trees are getting a medium amount of light, and the smallest trees are getting a smaller amount of light. We're now doing this with this blue distribution to make it more a stochastic kind of prediction of, so letting heterogeneity vary across plots, and then asking, what does that matter for productivity? So does heterogeneity, clumping, increase or decrease productivity, or is it a more complex effect? What we're finding right now is that as the model is parameterized now, what it means is that, so the green is with these kind of homogeneous forests, and the heterogeneity is basically means that these big trees are not growing as much as you would think they would with these other types of predictions. But we have a little bit more work to do to kind of push this heterogeneity across all the plots in more sophisticated ways, and then actually do the predictions like you saw before to see if we get better results. So that's ongoing. Finally, talk briefly about something that we're working on now as well. This is kind of the large controls over your productivity, GPP and NPP. We don't have to understand all of this, but the point is that there is this effect of stand age, which is strange to me. And in fact, if you look here, we saw this before, but if you predict NPP with stand age, how old your forest is, it's actually a really good predictor, apparently. So the question is, what is going on with that? Why would stand age matter? Could it be related to the architecture differences of a tree, of a young one or an old one? And I think that, you know, this is beyond any biomass effects. So one thing that I'm wondering if stem respiration has anything to do with this. So we've taken LIDAR, terrestrial LIDAR, and we've scanned a bunch of forests, and we've extracted the trees with partners at UCL, and we're taking the structure of these trees and fitting models to them. And because we know that the respiration, CO2, is a function largely of the surface area of these trees, we're trying to model in a much more precise way how the architecture of these trees and forests relates to the respiration, and if that's going to do a better job of informing us about how productivity varies in these different systems. If we're able to get a better handle on that, then we'll have to figure out a way of making that generalizable without everyone having to walk around with their own LIDAR system. But right now, what we're finding is these dots here, which correspond to the colored lines, are the traditional allometry that we've used to predict the amount of respiration that's coming from each of these trees. And what we find with these LIDAR predictions, which are these solid lines, is that there's a massive range. And in fact, some of these trees were doing this in Whiteham as well. So this is a scan of Whiteham. And for some of these larger trees, the stem respiration may be as much as 10 times higher than the allometry would predict. So that's an important component of the productivity of these systems, and we're hoping that this will go a bit of a ways towards helping us explain the difference that we're seeing. Okay, so I think that brings me to the end. So thank all my collaborators, funders, and thank you guys for being here.